You still owned Unreal 5. So that was your first night. What happened on the second day? On the first morning?
I suppose the first thing was to get the kit issued. Because we had nothing, you know. We had to go to the quartermaster stores and get all our kit. Button vests, denims, just me.
Yeah. Right, so we're talking about your issue of kit.
Issue of Bedford.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Could you describe how that happened, how you were issued with it?
Oh, well, we were just taken from the, we were in the barrack rooms, we were just taken, to the quartermaster stores, and, to draw the whole lot. I left the bigger items like the battle dress and the denims, boots and everything, to the last. And when you came out of there, by the time you came out, you had everything.
And so, what was everything? What was? Could you list everything that you were issued with?
Oh wow! Well, for a start, there's your battle dress and your forest cap, the bit of underwear, socks, boots, of course, slippers for PT, PT kit, that's the shorts and the singlet. Then there was some other small items, and things like mess tins and a mug, two plates, then we had a field dressing thing. I'm just trying to work out. Let's think now. Oh, these are something to sew your buttons on with. And I called our housewife. That was a little packet with needles and cotton and things in.
Did your battle dress fit?
Well,
and your boots?
It was a guess, really. Why they left that until last, because they were able to. They didn't have too many people there at any one time in that particular place, so that you may have been standing in a line, and then if you they sort of take two or three. They go up and get them, and just sort of look you over and take a guess and throw you this or that, whatever. And that was it.
But were they good guesses?
Generally speaking, they were quite good. But there was they knew what they were doing. You see, they'd done it so many times before. But yeah, that was pretty good. Because some of the things. Like the singlet and the shorts and the slippers and what you're telling me shoe size and that sort of thing. Didn't have any problem there, so.
So the boots were okay in your case?
Oh yeah, providing you were near enough. If there was anything that you needed to change, well then all you had to do was to tell somebody when you came to put them on and that sort of thing. And then they would change them for you. But that was all done in the early days of the training, you know.
So on this first day, can you remember much about your other recruits? You've mentioned some of the ones that you came on the train with you. Yeah. Were they all kind of London men or?
Well.
That London area, southeast area? Or?
They were mainly I can only speak for those who went into the same barrack room as me. They were mainly Southerners, mainly. We'd never really come across any North Country people at all at that stage, because especially being there. No, they were mainly Londoners and in and around London.
And you were still with the same NCO, training corporate
leader? Then we had two lance corporals in our training platoon. We had two lance corporals and a sergeant.
Can you remember who they were? What their names were?
I can tell you the name.
Right, so we're talking about the corporals.
There was a sergeant actually. There was a sergeant. His name was Alan. Sergeant Alan. There was a lance corporal Locke, and another lance corporal called Smith.
And were they regulars?
They were, yes. Well, now, you say regulars, you see, they may have been the, like, regulars reservists. You know, they were called back to the outbreak of war. Obviously, in Lance Corporal Locke's case, I think he was probably a time-serving man, because he was quite a young chap. So I would imagine that he was time-serving. He was in his colour service at that time. Smith was older, so I would imagine that he would have been somebody that had been recalled and on reserve. And this Sergeant Alan, he was obviously a reservist. He wasn't. I wouldn't have said that he would be on colour service. I think he had that. You could sort of tell the difference, if you see what I mean.
What was the difference?
Well, I mean, you could tell the difference of in the people concerned. Like this Locke, the Sergeant Lance Corporal Locke, he was only a youngster, but he was pretty obviously on colour service. He probably signed for 7 years or whatever it was they signed for in those days. And 7 years in colour service and 5 years on the reserve or something, didn't they? But I think that in case of Lance Corporal Smith, he would probably have been on his call back from his reserve, because he was a much older. He had a different sort of, why I'm saying the difference between them, same with the sergeant, he had a different way with him, you know. Whereas this Lance Corporal Lot was young and had plenty of go and all that sort of thing. You know, he was a different sort of outlook on everything.
So what kind of men were they? Were they strict?
The sergeant wasn't very popular, not only with us, but he wasn't very popular with anybody, I don't think, according to what I found out. As the time went along, he didn't seem to be in anybody's favour at all, really.
Why was that?
Well, I don't know. I think he must have been one of the mean type, you know. He never did me any real harm, but I did notice that he would be inclined to. He didn't favour anybody. He didn't favour anybody at all. He just took everybody as they were, but he never really gave you a lot of encouragement, which he could have done or should have done.
So he wasn't very helpful.
Not really. The Lance Corporal Smith and Locke were much better.
So they were prepared to show you how to do it.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you've been issued with your kit, and this is like your first morning in the army. What happened then?
Oh well, we were warned. If we wanted to find out anything, what we found out was that the bloke to ask was this Lance Corporal Locke, or Smith, either of them two. If you wanted to find out anything, which we all did, but we didn't know who to ask, really.
So what were the things that you were worried about that you needed to?
We sort of wanted to know what was coming next, and what we were going to be asked to do next, and all sorts of things like that, and you know, and give us some sort of an idea of what to look forward to, as you might say.
So you felt you'd been thrown in at the deep end, really?
Well, yeah, we were really. But what I'll say this: when we were in this barrack room. That's just a split hour platoon, and this nice Warsmith got us all together, and then he told us what he did. He was answering a lot of the questions that the people were asking ourselves in Tamil Nadu. And he said, you'll get your inoculation and vaccination. He said, your inoculation will come first. And he said, once you've had that, you'll get 48 hours excuse duty, because whichever arm you have it in will be pretty useless. So, well, some of us already knew about that because of talking to other people, and you know, what you do, you get a stiffness in your arm. Anyway, he got us together and told us that, and he said, and then of course he said, you've got the vaccination as well. And he said, that'll be on the other arm. Not the same arm, be on the other arm. And he said, you'll have to wait for the scab to dry and fall off. And once that's happened, you've got nothing to worry about. And he just sort of put us in the picture about what we were going to do. Said it would all be done at the, I don't know what they called it at Bedford, we always used to call it the RAP, Regimental Aid Post, but I gave it a name, but it meant the same thing.
So you had your inoculations. In terms of your routine of a day, you know, you're a young recruit, you just arrived, what was a daily routine? If you could just take us through like an early day in the army.
Maybe to some of them, because you see, we were all different, and I expect to some people it may have been a little bit frightening, because see, the Kempston barracks, it's a typical army barracks. I don't know what it is now, but they've moved it now, I think. The beds and hearts aren't there now, but it was a typical army barracks, and you just had the things like all brick built buildings, the officers' mess, sergeants' mess, naffy, orderly room, and then down one side you'd have the barrack rooms, or some of the barrack rooms, and they were all brick buildings, and we were in one of them. But there was also, then you had the whole of the barrack square. You had, I think there were about, there was one up and one down, so, and there would have been four barrack rooms on the square. And then there was a wall that went along at the end of the square. There was a wall built. It was about 6 or 8 feet high, with a big opening at the end, which allowed you through. And inside there was a gymnasium and a series of Nissen huts, where they were able to put recruits in there as well, so same as us, and which is what they did. And Jimmy James was in one of them when he was there. And I never actually went in one of them, but I saw them often enough, but I never actually went in them. They were like Nissan huts, they were Nissan huts.
So you reckon you were better where you were?
We were better.
More comfortable.
Yeah, we were better because, well, for one thing, we were in a building and that was only a wooden structure. When I say only, they were good structures, but it was more convenient for us.
So you've got your kid, you've been inoculated. How did your training progress? Your training into being a soldier.
The early training was mainly on the barrack square. You know, the drill, and they concentrated on that.
Did you have anybody who couldn't master it within your squad?
Oh yeah, you always get them and put into the awkward squad.
And what were the problems that even the problems you might have had yourself with drill? What were the things that civilians, ex-civilians, couldn't get right to start with?
I think it was the hardest thing to get used to was the fact that you did everything. You're looking at the time. It's not that you were rushed, but you tended to look at the time, you know, not to see what time it was or anything like that, but I think in Notts' case it was you did it because you were hoping that it would go a bit quicker than what it did, you know what I mean?
And so this was you were trained to march.
Yeah.
Was arms drill introduced at this stage as well?
Yeah. Oh yes, all done. Yeah, it was all done in stages, you see.
And did you have real rifles at this stage?
Oh yeah, it was issue with a rifle.
And then what rifle was it?
Lee Enfield. It was a Lee Enfield rifle. I was issue in those days.
And so were you trained to march with a rifle before you were trained to shoot it?
Yeah.
And in terms of at this stage, what was the NCO's style on the barrack square? Did they shout a lot, or were they different? Were different ones acting a different way?
Oh yeah, there was plenty of that, plenty of them. Yeah, it was all I'm not going to say insulting, but no, it was plenty of shouting going on. You had to get used to that.
Would they pick on people that couldn't get it?
They tended to pick on. You see, that's what I say about this Sergeant Allen. They nicknamed him Dodger. I don't know why, but anyway, that was Sergeant Allen. He would pick on people. Mm-hmm. He tended to pick on people who were perhaps a little bit backward, didn't pick up things perhaps as quick as some others.
So no. how would he pick on them? What would he do?
Well, I'll give you an example. This is sort of bloke he was. See, I told you, we went for our kit and we had this forest cap issue. But of course, in those days, we in the peasant hearts, you wear them along down the side there. So. But of course, we never worn these things before. And it's quite likely that in most cases, they weren't really the right size anyway. But you had to find that out, you see. So consequently, when you were like on the square, it was nothing unusual for somebody's forage cap to come off. But if Sergeant Allen was, if he was running things at that time, which he invariably was, you learned that if your hat came off, you didn't attempt to pick it up. You just did whatever you were doing. You carried on doing whatever you were doing and left your hat there. So that, say, you had a platoon, they marched you the length of the square and then back again. By the time you came back again to the spot where you were, there would probably be about three or four of these forage hats on the floor, you know. Well, he sort of took that in his stride. He was quite good about that, but I thought that he overdid it a bit because some of them couldn't seem to keep the hats on at all. And it was those people that he really you see, he sort of gunned for them a bit more than perhaps he would some of us, you know.
And what would he do? Would he shout at them? Or?
Well, what he would do is, they had an old, on the Barrack Square, in front of the sergeant's mess, they had an old cannon. And it wasn't anything particularly big, but you know what I mean, just an old cannon. And he used to, as these hats came off, he used to get one of these lance corporals to go and pick them up. And he would, if he was picking on one or two, like I said, those hats that instead of the lance corporal was giving the hats back to the people, he would take them. This Sergeant Allen would tell the lance corporals to go and hang this cap on the end of the cannon. Well, you wouldn't know about that because the lance corporal would do that when you weren't looking. And so you would carry on. Some of them carry on. Some of them didn't have the hats on. But he didn't worry about that. He just did it. That's what he did. Well, then, when the end of the period came, there would still be, say, maybe one or two still had no hats on. And he would then single them out and say, right, now, your next job is to go and find your hat. So you didn't have a clue where it was. And there it was, stuck up on the cannon. So that was his way. He was the same with things like when we were doing this, the bayonet, we used to put the dummies on. He was the same on that. If there was anybody he was picking on in there, he would personally take them to one side and deal with them himself.
You mean train them himself?
Yeah. Because some of them, there was nothing in that really, but I mean, it's just that you had to get used to being able to throw your rifle about and also keep control of it at the same time, you know, things like that.
So you were square bashing. What else were you doing in the early days?
Well, I was mainly square bashing. They didn't bring in the weapon training until we were beginning to show some sort of signs of improvement on the drilling stakes.
So in this first few weeks, I mean, what time would Reveille be?
Reveille?
Yeah.
Well, that was usually the same every morning. I'm not sure. I'm not quite sure, but I don't think it was as early as 6.
So you'd have that, and then what would happen after that?
Oh, well, you'd have that and get yourself washed and dressed and shaved and that sort of thing. And then start thinking about going to breakfast.
And what was the food like at this
stage? Well, the food in the depot wasn't bad. I must say that, it wasn't bad. It was mainly done by, cooked by the ATS. They had ATS girls in there. Not all of them, but there were quite a lot. No, it was quite good. And I wouldn't say it was anything. And one of the, I said that the barrack rooms, there was four, I said, well, one of those was the mess room, the mess hall, whatever they called it. So that would have been used for the meals. So there would only been, when I said four barrack rooms, there'd be only three. And one of them, the downstairs one, the other half to us, was used for a mess hall.
So you've had your breakfast. What would happen then? Would it be square bashing then?
Well, it'd be square bashing most of the day.
Most of the day?
Most of the day, yeah.
So you would do that in the morning. Would you have a break for dinner?
Well, yeah, you'd have a break, yeah.
And then you'd do more square bashing?
Yeah, you'd have a break and... And then like what they did, you see, they would with a square bash, and they you would take things sort of the turns and this one and the other. You would do it sort of daily, you see. One day you'd be doing all turns or you know, that sort of thing. And then the next day you'd perhaps concentrate on the marching, and next day put you know, the open order and all that sort of thing. But they'd all be staggered them all right. You weren't just doing the same things every day. There was something different most days, but it was basically it was to keep in control of your feet.
And so, but yeah. you had the rifles.
Oh yeah, And
so, were you taught to clean the rifle before you were taught to fire it?
Yeah. You were issued with a. That was part of your kit. What they used to call the pull through. You used to open the breech and put the metal end down, and then you used to have a loop on the end. With a little bit of, well, they called it, I had a name for it. I used to call it 4x2. But they used to put that into the loop. And then by that time, the weighted end would be down the end of the sights of the rifle. You'd just pull that through, you know, just for cleaning.
And was every recruit given his own rifle?
Yeah.
With a series on, when he would have a
serial number. Yeah, numbered. Yeah.
Did you have any memories of anybody kind of just not being able to cope with the early days of the training? You know, people that just couldn't, even in the Artwood squad. Or did everybody get through? Was it?
You didn't used to find many. There weren't that many in the Artwood. There was always an Artwood squad. Because that was something that had to be. You couldn't change that.
So you cope with it okay?
Me personally, but some people couldn't. Mind you, there weren't that many. Yeah. Some of them used to go into the awkward squad, and they would have a couple of days in there, and that was worse than what we were doing. And
did you have were there tougher instructors?
Oh yes, yeah, you'd have, they were picked.
Can you remember any of those, who they were?
I can't remember their names, because...
You didn't really have much to do.
I was never in New York, which was.
So it was mainly square bashing in the early days. What else, so you'd square bashing most of the day, what were you doing after that, if you were doing anything else?
What do you mean, in the evenings?
You can't have been square bashing all day.
They used to have... They gradually brought in the weapon training, things like brain guns and the mortars. They brought that in. I mean, it wasn't all. You just didn't go on square bashing all the time. They used to filter these weapon training in. And
how did they move you towards that first day when you actually picked up the rifle and fired the rifle? And can you describe that?
Hello, what?
How did they move you towards the moment when they said, look, here's the rifle, here's the ammunition?
They did it in the weapon training, really, because you would be taught how to load and reload and unload and all that sort of thing. Without, you know, you're not doing any firing, but you would nevertheless be taught how to do it and what to do and everything. So that in effect you were getting the weapon training at the same time, you see, and while you were doing that. So that by the end of the, in the end, but before very long, you always knew what it was you had to do. In the event that you had to, it was so common sense that you couldn't really fire, really.
So they started you on the Lee Enfield to fire that. Did they have like a range? Where would the range be?
Oh, yeah, well, you didn't get that until later on. Got that later on.
So you were training with a rifle, but without the ammunition?
Without the ammunition, that's right. Well, we were shown, we'd seen it, we knew what the ammunition was like. We knew exactly what to do, how many rounds to put in the magazine and how to put them in, how to reject them if we needed to, and so on. All that came in the weapon training, you know. It all came in between the, fairly long periods of square bashing, you see.
So in the early days, you did your square bashing, you've